Buddy, what's up, Mr. Front Row?
Sorry, guys.
Dude, no worries, man.
Good to be here.
This is the official start, right?
Danny, Missy, Kendall, Samantha, Terriel, what a great name.
I know.
Matt Duncan, what a crew.
Yeah, man. Dude, tell us what you've done today so far. I'm serious. What's your day been like?
I'll look at my calendar and tell you. Cool. Today is great. Today is a great day. Drove my son to school. Had an epiphany today, which I can share with you, something of value, which I think is of value right away. And that is, one of the greatest wins that I've had this year has been driving my son to school every day. And that has evolved over time. And, you know, like as an example, this morning, we're listening to Hal's Miracle Equation book, right? And that's our book. We listen to it on the way to school and we talk about it. And I paused the audio this morning and I said to Tiger, I said, who's 9, by the way, for anybody who doesn't know my family or my son. And I said, Tiger, I said, this is the last week of school. And I'm thinking to myself, I love this time together that we have in the car. When are we going to get this back? Like, how are we going to do this? Because over the summer, I feel like I'm really going to miss this time. And he said, well, why don't we just get in the car and just drive to school and then just drive home? And I said, I love the spirit of that. And I said, I don't know that we're going to do that, but what if we got in the car and we drove to a park? And every day we spent the first half hour together just driving to a park, walking around the park and coming home, and we could listen to books and talk about things. And like, we just don't have to give up that time. And so we made a pact and agreed on that today, which was really cool. So that's how the day started. And it was like a real victory. This morning, because one of my ahas as a father was like giving my kids the best of me and not the rest of me. That was like a major breakthrough for me, where my real gift isn't working and providing income. It's working to provide time. That's where my real value is as a dad. And then after that, that fun morning was a podcast interview with a doctor who I brought on to the Front Row Dads podcast. Out of that, it was recording a solo show that I've been releasing on Thursdays. And then after that, I did the sauna with one of our Front Row Dads and a local here in Austin, a guy named Ryan Rouse, who's just a phenomenal human being. And so we do sauna and then sauna pool, 3 rounds, 1 hour, talking about life. And we swap ideas, one idea from him, one idea from me. And that's it. And I just had lunch with Tatiana at Whole Foods, big, beautiful salad, talked about family life. And here I am. There you go.
Boom. Dude, well, you introduced us to Tiger, who's your oldest, and Tatiana, who's your wife. You have one more son, whose name is
Ocean, and he is 4.
Ocean.
And Ocean has been building with these magnet tiles lately. Guys, it's so fun to watch him build with these things. Every day I come down, and he's got a new creation that he builds. I don't know if you can see this. Let me see if I can try to show for those of you watching, like, you see that magnet, it's a whole building. And he tells me, he's like, oh, and over here is the bedroom and there's the toilet. And this is where people drive into the building. And he's got elaborate, you know, new architectural designs every single day. And it's great. It's just awesome.
Dude, I love that. I remember being there when Ocean was putting one of his construction sites together. And Tiger's ball accidentally knocked over one of the magnetic pieces.
Yep.
And it was as if the building, literally a wall of a building, fell down.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, we had that this morning. Well, this morning we dealt with Ocean knocked over one of Tiger's buildings. So Tiger decided to knock over Ocean's building.
Dude. Okay. So let's just start there. What did you do?
How did I handle that?
Yeah, how'd you handle it, and what were you thinking as you were?
It's always moments like this where, when I tell somebody how I handled it, that I'm sure that I'm exposing weaknesses as a father because I'm not handling it correctly.
That's the best part. That's how we are in every area of life.
Yeah, you know, my goal is, when something like that happens, is I have a couple of things that go through my head and through my heart. One is, how can I remain calm through this whole thing? Like, first center my energy, right? Like, how do I make this not, so there's not like a shaming, like a massive disappointment. How could you, Tiger? Like, what kind of person are you that would do that? Like, I want to make sure that I center my energy and really put this in check, right? So first I just say, whatever it is, John, just be calm. right? Like you stay level-headed, like just be what you hope to see in others, right? So that's one. Number two is I try to ask questions. I try not to do too much assuming. I try not to believe too many people too fast. I try to just like, hey, hey, he knocked it over. Okay, it's easy to be like, Tiger, how could you? But I try to do a little bit of homework, a little bit of listening to both sides. And then what I do is I try to ask what would make this right, right? Like what makes this good? What makes people feel whole? What do people really want, right? And then I'm trying to get to there. I think a lot of mine is through questions and listening and just processing. You know, hey, Tiger, you know, so what happens if you knock over his castle, right? And then he feels like, hey, then he comes back and knocks over one of your castles and you knock over one of his. Where does that end? Like, tell me how that gets us to a point of resolution, right? And so, yeah, actually, we had a whole talk about how wars are started and how some countries have been feuding for thousands of years because, you know, it's like, well, you did this and now I'm going to get even with you. And we talked about revenge and what that means. And so we just explore things together when those topics come up, whenever possible. And we can't always have these aren't 20-minute full-blown conversations, but this one was 3 minutes of talking about what it means to get revenge. And I talked about how, you know, I'm sure a lot of people know this when they're listening, but this like feel, felt, found. Hey, I feel sometimes like I want to get revenge, you know, or I felt that way before, something like that, right? Or I know how you feel. Here's what I felt in the past. And what I found was this, you know, I found that when I tried revenge, that didn't work for me. So sometimes it's looping it into a story too. Let me tell you a story about sometime I got revenge on somebody and where it got me.
And what were some of the things that they had to say today?
About that?
Just like about like, what did they have to say when they were telling you the stories? Like what were some of the things that Tiger Ocean said to you about today's experience?
A lot of it's hurt feelings, right? Like a lot of it's misunderstanding. A lot of what you find in these cases is misunderstanding. So he knocked it over on purpose and the other person will say, I did it on accident or I didn't know, right? Or I accidentally hit it when I was swinging on the swing. There's a lot of inferring, that I have to do from that because I don't think you're always getting the full story. There's some good manipulation of words. There's some good, purposeful shading and coloring and things that, you know, they'll both do. But yeah. I think that's what they'll say. They'll say, you know, hey, you know, he did this to me. He really hurt my feelings. And well, you deserved it. Or if you didn't do that, I wouldn't do this. So that's what they often will say in situations like that, right? It's hard to know like who started what and why they did it. But really what they're getting at is, hey, somebody's feelings got hurt and how do we deal with hurt feelings? That's really what it comes down to.
Wow. That was awesome. That was awesome.
And isn't what happens in marriage too, or business relationships is like feelings got hurt and then they spiral out of control. But so many of the pain points of business transactions and, marriage, challenges, a lot of it comes back to somebody's feelings got hurt. Somebody's needs aren't being met, right? Somebody had an expectation and their reality doesn't match up to that. That's so much of what it is. And so a lot of it is an understanding both of ourselves and other people, and how we get there is just by being, oftentimes by being curious. Ego is a big one, right? That gets wrapped up in all of our lives. And so knowing when, you know, our righteousness sets in, right?
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think that the miscommunication between kids, especially, and having someone there like yourself, it reminds me of this time where we had Braden at the front row summit, where one of the kids punched another kid and he was like, okay, come here. What happened? Right. He did what you were talking about. Like he did a little bit of research. He did a little bit of investigating, if you will, to kind of hear from both of them and allow them to hear from each other what the perspectives were and how powerful that is versus what you said initially, which is, all right, I've heard from Tiger and Tiger said Ocean started it. So now I'm looking at Ocean and now I'm scolding Ocean, even though I've not heard Ocean's voice. So I think that there's a lot of, like you said, patience.
Yeah.
and that when you center yourself, you give yourself a little bit more of an ability to be an observer to that situation unfolding, to where you can now ask the questions versus just jumping in and having kind of like an aggressive approach.
Yeah. And I remember talking to Braden about that. I don't remember exactly what he said, but what comes to mind and what comes to my heart when we're talking about this situation with Braden, he's very, very good, right? Is he'll say, he'll just look at both boys and say, what happened in your mind, right? Like, what happened in your mind and how did that make you feel? And what is it that you really want here? And then he'll look at the other person and say, do you think that you could understand that, like, that's how he would feel? And do you think that you, like, do you understand what he wants? And do you understand that, like, from his perspective, it might feel that way? And then the other kid goes, yeah. And then he goes, what happened in your mind, right? Where did your feelings get hurt? What is it that you ultimately want? And then he'll look at, you know, keeps going back and forth. Like, hey, can you understand, by the way, that he feels that way and that he might have felt a little bit and that what he really wants is this? Cool. You guys both understand each other. Squash it. Let's go. Right? Hug it out or pound it out or whatever, right? It's like, just squash it. Let's go. But the best thing is just to move on. What's great about Braden too, and I think what's really good about a lot of good mentors is that they're good at coaching, but they don't overdo it, right? They don't have to beat the point silly.
Yeah.
Where it just drags on and on and on. I hear that a lot from both the kids and also from adults who were once kids, right? Who would say that one of the things they didn't appreciate is when an adult treated them like idiots and they would over talk a point, but it's like, hey, you get it. You get it. All right, squash it. Let's go.
Mm.
Sometimes that's, you know, we think that more value means more words and it's not.
Yeah. Hey, it actually reminds me of this is kind of switching topics a little bit. And it's also okay, keeping switch. To,
I have a high need for variety.
Dude, this is okay. Great. I'm going to give you some variety right now because I also have a high need for variety as well. And the kind of new flavor we're going to bring in is when I want your perspective on this. Okay. So imagine you're at a family gathering. Okay. And you have an aunt. And the aunt has it's a cousin. You have a cousin who has a like 12-year-old daughter. And the aunt goes, hey, the 12-year-old daughter can sing. And I go, hey, 12-year-old daughter. I go, oh, you can sing? And then the mom answers my question to the 12-year-old daughter. And then there almost was like, I could feel a discomfort from the daughter. And now the mom, and I've seen this, the reason I'm bringing it up is I've seen this over and over and over again in the FamBundance community and in many other places. Now the mom is all of a sudden speaking for the daughter and pushing the daughter in kind of a unproductive way into her uncomfortable zone, making her feel awkward and uncomfortable and self-conscious all at the same time. But my cousin, the mom, actually thinks that she's doing her a favor.
Totally. Yeah.
I love your thoughts on this.
Well, and from whose perspective, thoughts on like how you might handle it or?
Well, I handled it and in my own little way. And my cousin looked at me and she's like, how did you just do that?
And how did you handle it?
I did the very first thing that I did is what you said just a minute ago, which is I took less ownership in the outcome right away. Like I was very clear that I had no meaning if she did it or not.
Yeah.
So like I took away that I was outcome based, where on the other side, because I could see her mom was outcome based. Mm-hmm. So I just took that away and was like, so like, and then I just started giving options. I was like, at first I had to tell my aunt and my cousin to be quiet for just a second. I was like, oh, wait, 1 second. Can you let Avery talk for a minute?
Yeah.
Right. And then I just like, Avery, is it cool if I ask you a couple of questions? And she was like, sure. I was like, is it just like, what do you feel like when you want to sing or in a place like this? She's like, I kind of feel pressure and I kind of feel like it's awkward now. She was very well spoken too. So she was just giving us the information. And I said, well, what else? She's like, you know, sometimes I can't think of the melody in my head.
Yeah.
Right? Without help or without the song. I was like, well, what if I sing it with you? She's like, oh, I might be able to do that. Mm. And then I just started singing right there. Mm-hmm. And I just started singing the melody.
Cool.
And then the second time through, I just looked at her and was like, hey, just jump in here. And then I just was like, and I made it nonchalant and just gave her a safe place, if you will, to where she wasn't being judged or anything. Now, I think there's many ways that you could navigate that. That was just one. And so now let's look at it then, since I just gave it from my point of view, how would you give it from a parent's point of view?
If I was the parent that was over, that was talking for a child, is that what you mean? Or like how would I? Yeah. Well, maybe. Well, let me ask this question. My dogs are going crazy, so I don't know if you could hear that. They're celebrating the arrival of Mama. So let me ask this: is the thought, and I'm trying to think about like how I deliver my answer.
Yeah.
Is the thought about how, what lesson could a parent learn about this scenario? Is that the question?
Yeah, like some of it is, what's a lesson that a parent could learn? And also, what's going on inside of the parent that allows them to do that? Because ultimately she really cares about the daughter.
Totally.
So like a little bit of both of that.
Yeah, I think that what happens, my guess, let me say, first of all, the guess about how a parent gets to the point to where they'll talk for their kids is that one, that we often treat our kids like we remember them yesterday, not as who they've become today. And you've heard me tell that story about Tiger climbing the rock wall. Why is it that I didn't, and if anybody wants to see that video, by the way, we probably link to that or something, but there's the short story so everybody follows is that my son's going to climb this rock wall. I don't think he can do it, but he ends up doing it. And I questioned at the end, why did I not believe in my own son? Like here I am, like a motivational speaker, a coach who wants to help people achieve what's, you know, it's seemingly impossible. And yet with my own son, I'm like, oh, he probably can't do that. Why is that? And it's because we remember people as they were, not as who they've become. We haven't, you know, we need to see them with a fresh set of eyes each day and a potential of who they can become in any given moment, right? And so I think that's part of it. They're just trapped. Some parents are trapped that my kid is not going to be able to answer this question. They also think that they're child might be struggling to answer the question. So they're like, I don't want to see my child struggle. I don't want to see them uncomfortable. So I'm going to just step in and speak for them here because they're not going to be able to do it on their own. And I don't want them to be in a place where they're just going to be like blank stare at Brother James and not being able to talk. So I'm just going to talk for them. I think that's my guess, right? Of why some parents will do that. Right?
Yeah.
People do it for their husbands and wives. Like, you know, they'll talk for their, you know, for their spouse. Here's what they think. Here's what they feel. It's like, it's not a good habit. And likely they might have learned it from somebody else. But you know, oftentimes I think people do it because they think they're doing something good, you know, in that moment for whatever reason it is. The danger is, of course, in doing that, we take away their voice. And, you know, like even what's interesting is at a restaurant, right, or a cafe or wherever, we're ordering something and there's a server or somebody who's trying to help us. They'll look at me and say, what will your son have? And now he's 9, you know, and what about your son? And I'd say, oh, you should ask him. Right? Like I literally will defer because I'm actually conscious at this point to where I want that person to speak directly to my son, and I want my son to speak directly to that person. I want them to have a conversation. I don't want to order food for him. I want him to order the food, right? Or whatever it is. So I'm consciously trying to do that. When I'm in a situation like you were in, I think you handled it beautifully. What I would say in that scenario would be, I like to look at the child and say, oh, what do you think? Like once the parent chimes in with their thoughts, if I'm in that situation, I'll just completely go, oh, that's interesting. And then I'll look at the child and I'll say, depending on the age or the stage or wherever, sometimes I'll squat down and I'll look and I'll say, oh, tell me what you think. And I feel like in a very subtle way or maybe a very direct way, I'm telling the parents, I would also like to hear what your child has to say.
Yeah.
And last thing I'll say about this, and this is how sensitive I am to this exact subject about parent people speaking directly to their kids and people speaking highly in front of their kids. One of my pet peeves is when I hear parents, and I'm not saying I'm perfect, by the way. I've done this. I'm sure somebody could say, I've heard you do this, John. I try to not do this. But parents will say in front of their kids, you know, you'll be talking about something, you know, struggling with something. I can't even think of a good context to set up this scenario, but you'll get what I'm saying. But something will happen where the parent will say, well, this one over here, and kind of pointing to their child who's like 4 feet away, I can barely get them to eat any vegetables, right? And they'll say something that's like maybe a fact, but it's like, I think parents might throw their kids under the bus more often than they realize. And they're saying it kind of jokingly. They're saying it to build a relationship with another adult or have camaraderie or like sympathy or empathy or whatever it is, or connection with somebody where they're like, yeah, my child won't eat a single, I struggle to get this one out of bed in the morning, or, you know, hey, if I could get this one to, right? And I hear that a lot, and more often than I think is healthy, right? There's no problem with calling somebody out, especially your kids, or saying it like it is, or addressing something head on. But how we talk about our kids in front of other people, I think, is really important. And so, absolutely, especially when they're quote unquote not listening, right? Hal tells a story about that. Our buddy, for anybody who doesn't know, this guy Hal, who is a good friend of ours, and he talks about how, you know, one of his managers at one point was saying something nice about him, and Hal didn't think that, you know, the guy knew he was listening, but he was. And from that moment on, he said something nice about him when he wasn't supposed to be hearing it. And it made a big impact in how he saw himself and his potential in life. So I think those are really important things to all consider. And so we can give those kids a voice, and we can play a parenting role for almost any child in certain circumstances when we choose to step into that role.
Well said, man. Yeah. I love what you said about a parent referring to what you could consider something that is not a strength from the child, and then introducing them that way.
Yeah.
Like, it just happened in our family event. And this one is one I see all the time. It's very common. The initial kind of approach a family approaches, and they have a smaller child, maybe between, whether it's 12, 13, and I say smaller, but this was just with a 10-year-old, or smaller, and they walk up, and the first thing that they say when you go to introduce yourself is they go, oh, she's shy.
Yes, yeah.
And right there, I'm like, I actually can see, I was watching so precisely at this young girl, because I was already aware of the dynamic in our family of her coming in and how I wanted to show up for her.
Yeah.
And right away, it was like three people in the family saying it with a certain tone in a certain way. And I was like, oh my gosh, this young girl is getting programmed in a way. And what's so crazy is that literally I posted about this in the FamBundance community earlier today, that less than 24 hours later, this 10-year-old who's super shy was in a car with seven cousins that she had never met before the night before, driving 45 minutes to go on a 3-mile hike.
Yeah.
It's like, it's almost as if, so it was just such an interesting experience to watch all that happen so quickly and be like, she's actually not shy, but if they introduce her that way all the time, what's going to happen to her?
Yeah.
In her life.
Yeah, that's right. Well, we labeling, right? She is, he is, like all these labels that we give, we have to be very, very careful about those words that come out of our mouth and the identities that are shaped. And look, none of us are perfect.
Totally. And,
you know, we can't go around like monitoring every word that rolls off of our tongue. We'd be living with high degrees of anxiety, but we can certainly become more aware and more conscious about these words and how they show up. You know, Tatiana and I talk about this all the time. Like, even the way that we ask the questions to kids, right? Like, why won't you go do that? What's stopping you from doing that? Versus, how can we phrase it in a way that not brings about their weaknesses, but that brings out their strengths? Now, there's nothing wrong with asking some of those questions, because sometimes we do need to expose the weakness and the pain and the, right? Sometimes we need to ask, like, what's wrong here and what can we do about it? At times, that's appropriate. But we have to be conscious about whether or not that's our dominant language or not, in the way that we speak. And so again, you know, we want to be natural and feel like we can just flow in and out of conversation, and that we're not like monitoring every single word that we say when we're talking to our kids or other kids. The other thing I would say about that, by the way, and I think the shy comment is like, I look at my role in the world as a way to, if I have the awareness to note that, Because I don't think most people even see that. I don't think they're doing it. They're certainly not doing it with malicious intent. They're just trying to speak a fact. And like in their mind, that's how they see the situation. Or they're trying to like maybe ease it, you know, ease the pain for that person. Again, serving their child. Like, hey, I'll just let you know she's shy so that
she doesn't
have to. But sometimes I'll say, hey, we all can be shy at times. Like I'll say, let me see if I can use some of my wizardry words to now paint a new perspective on this situation. Like, hey, by the way, we all can be shy at times, right?
Yeah,
and
love
so
that.
I can appreciate that. And sometimes, by the way, I feel shy. So I might just bring that as like to light and say, we all can be that. We all have a tendency to be that way at times. And, you know, and so sometimes it's like our words that follow up comments like that can also be healing in the moment as well.
Oh man. Yeah. Well, I'm a big words guy. So I love everything you just said. I think that words are one of our most powerful tools to lift up the human technology that lives inside of us. I think that you said two things there that I think are going to emerge as two things that as we continue to evolve as humans, that we see as a currency that has been right in front of us the whole time. And that's the questions that we ask ourselves and each other, and then the conversations that ensue. And that within those conversations is a certain series of words that when we look at what we are and what we hope and aim to be, that those very words and questions actually create who it is that we'll become.
Yeah.
And so it's
catching kids doing the right things, by the way, also like,
absolutely.
It's catching people doing the right things. It's expanding and highlighting what's good. So sometimes it's not even necessarily all the words that we're saying, but when those words are said. Sometimes we fail to see that. It's like the words don't have to be magical, but what they amplify can be.
Yeah, it's Berghoff was doing, and you might do this all. You might do this too. This is such a practical and easy thing to do for me as a cool uncle, as Jim Shields would refer to me as. The idea of those words and how simple they can be. Something Berghoff said that he's been doing is with his kids, when he hugs them, he'll say, you're such a great human. You're such a great kid. Yeah. You're so beautiful. Or you're so smart. And I started doing it with his kids specifically, and they never really respond. And I can feel, like, I remember being behind Kaizen and giving him like a hug on his birthday and being like, you're such a great kid. And just, I can feel the smile inside of him as I said it, right? Like, I'm just like, this is these small, teeny little phrase that is acknowledging in such a simple way. And so, hey, I want to move on to something that I think is so, I'm really curious about. I've never asked you about something that you've done and you've done it over and over again now. Which is, you left a career of certainty to follow something that you were really passionate about, which was, you left a sales and marketing company to start the Front Row Foundation, a nonprofit, you can explain what that is. And then the Front Row has now emerged as its own brand. So Front Row Dads specifically.
Yeah.
And that these are like passion projects that have been calling to you and that you've been following, and you've been on this adventure of following what's deep inside of your heart to connect to something that brings on deep meaning for you. I'm curious, you know, tell us about that journey of going from a certainty-based career financially and being in a cool company to going after something you love to now going after something else you love, and how that's played a role in the way that you try and help identify and support the passions you see in your kids.
Yeah, well... That's a really good question. So, and let me start with the definition so that you asked about Front Row Foundation. There may be some people listening who don't know. So a charity that helps kids and adults who have a life-threatening illness to have a front row experience at the event of their dreams. So think Make-A-Wish, but very niche with some very distinct processes that separate us and make us a unique organization, one that so many that are in this community support. So thank you to everybody out there who supports Front Row Foundation. So there's a couple of things that I think, if we're relating it back to specifically like the purpose of this group, right? And like, how has this informed my ability to be a parent, a husband, and ultimately to hope, raise and nurture wonderful humans, right?
And don't forget about yourself. Like, how do you stay true to yourself along this journey?
Totally.
How is that, you know?
And I think that's a big part of it. You know, in fact, earlier this morning, I interviewed Dr. Laura, who, you know, one of the things that she was talking about was, she was talking about anger, neediness, and sadness, and how that shows up in men. She works with high performing men, very high profile guys who want help, but can't let anybody know that they want help. Like, not even like they can't even submit it through insurance type of stuff. At least they feel that way. Right. And so what we were talking about is what they face. And one of the things when we talk about anger and the idea of anger and how that shows up in our world, we talked about, you know, this idea of sadness. Many men deal with depression and anxiety that show up in her office, that have built very successful businesses. They have faced this. And of course, the conversation ultimately led down the path of taking care of yourself in a way so that you could take care of others. Like, for example, if you're angry about things, sometimes men, I'll speak to men specifically, because this is my experience, of course, and this is who I'm serving, right? But they'll feel like if they admit that they're angry, that they're out of control. Like, as if they're really dialed in, they should not be angry, right? Like, if you're angry, something is broken within you. And so that oftentimes when we are angry, we try to mask that. And then what happens is we might be good at masking it for the moment. But then what happens is we end up blowing up completely. And you'll see this, right? Like, people's lives that look perfect, and all of a sudden, like, something major happens and there's a major meltdown, right? Or somebody takes their own life, even, you know, something as dramatic as that. But you know, what we need to do is sort of recognize these pieces of ourselves, this self-awareness, this awakening of ourselves, and be honest so that when we are, we can then be better for others, right? That's the short version. We could travel down that road for a very long time. But here's what it came down to for me. Part of leaving that corporate position, part of starting Front Row Foundation, part of pursuing passions of mine and purpose-filled work, things that I believe are important to fulfill my mission on earth, right? Like, why am I here? These questions that we often ask, who am I really? What are my talents and strengths? What problems do I want to solve in the world? Who do I want to stand up for? Why do I want to stand up for those people? How can I stand up for those people? A big part of being in the Front Row, our philosophy is stand up, step up, you know, stand up, step up, speak up, right? And so first we have to do that for ourselves, to know what we want. And this speaks to everybody, not just men, right? This is everybody. Know what you want. Because when you know what you want, when you learn who you are, right, you can then go live a very authentic and dynamic and purpose-filled and meaningful life when you do that. When you take the time to get to know yourself, when you take the time to understand aspects of your personality in your life, understand the programming of your world, the beliefs that you formed as a child and that are affecting your world today. When we take time for ourselves, we are definitely better people for our families, because it is very difficult to take care of somebody else when you're not taking care of you. All right. And so that is how it affects my ability to be a dad. I mean, literally for the last 13 years, I've been designing a life that is one that I ultimately wanted to lead as a husband, father, and family man, from choosing a line of work that would give me the time freedom that I crave, right? Choosing some of my projects that not only fulfill my mission with the world, but my family. Like, writing a book for me was that. It was not just to document the Front Row. The Front Row Factor wasn't just about everything you can learn about living life from people fighting for it. It was a gift to my children, so they know their dad, right? I was speaking words into their heart as much as anybody else's, right? And so that to me is the tie between those things, that all of this has been a journey to get to know myself and honor that enough to where I've created a life to where I can ultimately step up for my family in the way that I want to. in all the categories.
And then how do you support, the second part of that question is, how do you support, as you get to know yourself and you know that by going after your passions and by going after these callings, if you will, that are calling to you to say, hey, you're going to step into this place. It's potentially going to be uncomfortable, but boy, you know, you're going to get to know yourself. You're going to get to have an adventure. You're going to get to live in uncertainty, right? Like, how do you take what you've learned and watch your kids and help them to follow the things? Like, I know that you talked about Ocean being really into the blocks, and I know Tiger's really into climbing and being outside and just being like a little adventurer. Like, how do you support that and help them to bring that alive? Even how do you help them to experience it more?
Yeah, part of it is, like, for me, if we go back to actually the principles I wrote about in the book, right? So there's hope, there's celebration, and there's presence. So we call the three forces of the front row factor, right? So understanding the power of hope into the future, right? How do we bring the power of possibility into the present moment so we can do something about it? The power of celebration, how do we look in the past and bring those highlight moments into our present world and learn from those? What worked and how do we do more of it? And the power of being fully present, not knowing what's going to happen in the future and not worried about the past, but just being in the moment so that we can maximize those experiences. So that's a part of it, right? The other part of it, the three areas of focus for living a front row life is relationships, environment, and mindset. Relationships, environment, and mindset. And so I parent the same way that I wrote that book. And honestly, it was a discovery for myself about, like, what is happening here? What is the front row factor? It was a quest, right? And what I uncovered was certainly not the first time anybody's uncovered the power of relationships, you know, mindset or environment, right? Like, I just wrote about it with a certain storyline behind it, which is the front row, right? And that's it. We oftentimes all realize, oh, we're all talking about the same things. It's all the same stuff, just recycled and circulating through new stories and new connections. But that's it. We're trying to pass down wisdom that many of us agree on. Most of us would agree that, hey, how you think about things matters, or who's in your life and the relationships you have matters, and the environment is key. So I look at that as for my kids and say, how do I do that with my kids? What environment do I put them in? You know, you look at my living room and you'll see it's a very intentionally designed living room. You've been in it, right?
Oh, yeah, dude.
There's a swing in the middle of my living room. This
is just a swing. It's like a flying trapeze, silk clothy handle. Like, it's awesome.
Right? Yeah. There's rebounders and bouncy balls. Like, dude, is my home going to make it into the Pottery Barn magazine? Probably not. I mean, I don't think so. It's not like the most beautifully designed home. There's an orange, you know, acro swing in the middle of the room. But yeah, what I recognize is that am I living a life so that I'm, you know, my friends are all impressed that and tell me my house should look like it should be in a Pottery Barn magazine? Or am I living my life to create an environment that nurtures a human soul, right? Yeah. In the best ways possible. And so, I mean, look, I like things to look nice too. That's not the point. But the point, you know, what I'm getting at is, how do I shape an environment that allows for people to really come alive? So what are those things that we can put into their proximity that allows for my boys to feel like they can create and build? And, you know, sometimes it's a big failure too. Like, I think sometimes on these podcasts and in these interviews and things like that, it comes across like everything I'm doing just, hey, let me tell you all the areas where the Romans are winning. But let me also tell you, there's tons of frustration around this too. Like, we'd set up this whole art center and my wife, like, so desperately wants our kids to draw pictures and make things out of art. And, like, we have all these boxes with all these supplies and it's beautifully designed and it's right there, and they won't do a single art project. And, like, you know, Tatiana wants to rip out her hair because she's like, I just want my boys to, like, you know, I want to come down in the morning and the boys are sitting there with paint and they're making pictures. And they're like, look at us, mom, we're little artists. And, my, you know, she's like, oh, this is great. The Romans are awesome. But the kids are like, I don't like to paint. I hate painting. Painting sucks, right? And so there's parts, like, there's so many moments like that where we will try to create an environment. We will put things in front of them. And we think, you know, in our minds, we define success as, like, they would want to do art, but they don't have any interest, right? And I'm sure lots of parents can relate to that. Like, you want your, you sometimes have these expectations for your kids and they don't live up to them. And you can feel like you're failing and they're failing and all this is, it's going to be a giant failure in the end, right? But I think that for me, Jared, that my thought is this, that if we can try to remove the things are like, it should be like this, and that we can become all committed to experimenting. Try this out. Put this in the living room. Try this sport. Try this instrument. Try out this way of parenting. Try this way of listening. Try this way of communicating. And then test what happens. You know, a lot of times in our Front Row Dads group, these are very successful business guys that are part of our community. And oftentimes I'll say, bring the best of your work home. Sometimes we've been conditioned, like, leave your work at work, right? Like, don't bring your work home. But I say, bring the best of your work home. Does that make sense?
Tell us more.
Well, the idea of, like, you know, a lot of guys will go in, and I got to give my buddy Isaac Tolpin credit for this, right? So he's on a podcast with me, and I'm interviewing him about his life. And I think he's an epic dad. I think he has 7 kids now, maybe. Really amazing human being. And he said, you know, John, it hit me that I'll spend all this time with my team, my business team, structuring meetings, thinking about where everybody is and what questions I want to ask and how the whole meeting's going to flow. I'll spend an hour planning out a meeting with my team, right? I'll spend all this time thinking about how to structure daily huddles, but yet at dinner time, I don't put any time into thinking about how that goes for my family. I just show up, sit down, eat, maybe ask a couple questions, you know, and he said, but what if we came to dinner with the same type of intention? What if we planned things like that? Now, it's not always going to go according to plan. And I'm not saying treat your kids like they're your employees, or treat your wife like, you know, your partner, that they work with you or for you. That's not it. But the goal would be that there are things we do for our businesses that we don't do for our families. Like, we'll have clearly defined values in our business, but not for our family. We'll have really intentionally designed calendars, you know, for our work week about how we're going to get, you know, how we're going to do things. But then on the weekends, we might just, you know, just let things go as they may. Now, there's nothing wrong with that too, by the way, right? Because, like, sometimes you're like, hey, it's good to have unstructured time. All these things are in context, of course. Like, all these things are not like silver bullets that solve every problem, but there are things that I was doing in my business that I wasn't doing at home that if I were to do them would change things. Like, for example, just listening, asking questions. When I'm working with an employee or a contractor or a client, I might be really good at listening and asking questions and being open-minded. But with my kids, I'm much quicker to say, do this, don't talk back. Like, this is the way it's going to roll. And, you know, why is it that, you know, because we're most comfortable with our families at times. We drop our guard. We, you know, we're sometimes most brutal with those that we love. And there's a little bit of the work highlights the things that are actually working at work that we can bring home. That's my point.
Yeah, there's so much truth to that. It's, and I think on the simplest level, it's what we focus on expands.
Yeah.
And behind all of the different sequences you were describing and how Isaac was approaching business is really just a whole lot of attention.
Yeah.
And so if you just put attention, you know, if you just have that time where it's like, I'm going to spend attention on this thing. So attention was one. The other thing is that when we create values in our business and we create goals, we're more naturally drawn to the day-to-day activities because we have these kind of signifying things that 100%. Draw us towards that.
Yep.
And, you know, as we've continued to grow our FamBundance community, one of our main trainings, and you might call it an activity or even a product, is our family values workshop that we have a whole workbook for all of our families that they can go through as a family for a family meeting with some sticky notes, and they get to synthesize and theme out what are their family values based on when their family's been at their best and what are some of the strengths that they see inside of their family. So, and if, I don't know if Kendall's on still, he might be gone. He is on. If Kendall's there, Kendall, buddy, if you're there, I would just love for you to just for like 1 minute, because it's a live call and it'd be great to get an audience member, a community member, just share really quickly just what you've observed in the time that you've spent with your family, putting together your values, not necessarily everything you come up with, but just more, what have you observed in regards to how you and your family are able to be more present for each other in your day-to-day life?
I think as we've committed more time together as a family on it, the relevance or the importance has settled in now to it has become, you know, who we are as Kirks. It's a part of what we do now that we continue to, you know, we talk about our values. We try to live our values. We try to share our values, you know, and it's over time, you know, and it's still an evolving process, but you know, it's, I guess who we're becoming is kind of, you know, been my experience thus far with it. And it's together as a family, right? Where previously we were all kind of individuals, sometimes come together, but now we're more united, if you will.
Yep, exactly. And when you look at a team, one of the things that happens in a business, like what Isaac is talking about, is when you put that in, that time and effort towards it, the team naturally, especially if you're someone as smart as Isaac, right? Your team is naturally going to grow stronger, closer, more productive. And within that is more of an identity of who they are. And it just makes a human want to be part of it. And what's amazing is when I watch the families configure their values like the Kirks, that you can see the kids start to merge into those values. And as Kendall said, start to live it.
Yeah.
So that's just to the point of like, one of the things we're really priding ourselves on here is how do we create those, like, how do we make it so that you don't have to go home and try and figure out how to create your own meeting for your family, but we just give you a playbook so that you can just
totally
create the time block and then do it.
Yeah. Well, and yeah. I think we like frameworks, right? It's why
love them.
It's why so many frameworks are used, and like Hal's a great example, right? Of why the Miracle Morning works. Like, is he the first one to ever think about waking up early and like reading a book? You know, it's like, no, but he created a framework and, you know, and he put some things together. It works, right? Jim Shields, you know, and his family board meeting, like, hey, is he the first one to ever talk about one-to-one time with your kids? No, but he put a framework together and we love that. So I'm grateful that Fambundance is doing this because it's so needed, right? I want to say this too, that, and I call myself out on this. So this isn't me like from a soapbox, you know, I've got this all figured out. I tell guys, I didn't start Front Row Dads because I was like the best husband and best dad in the world. And I needed to tell everybody how to do it. I started it because I needed answers. I wanted answers and I wanted to learn with and from my brothers. Right. And that's why it started. But this idea that sometimes like, look, some guys do need to go easy on themselves, right? Some guys like they're too hard on themselves, and that's actually hurting them, right? Beating yourself up is not going to solve the problems. But also sometimes we're good at like, you know, people have even said to me over time, they're like, it's all right, John, like just show up and love your family and everything's going to be fine. And while I understand the spirit of that and that there is some truth to that for sure, I also think that's a cop out. To just be like, hey, it's just cool. Just show up. Just love your family and everything's going to be fine. I'm like, no, it's not. Because they need more than that. They deserve more than that. They, you know, that in some ways is like, hey, it's okay to just like throw yourself into your work. If you just show up a little bit here and there for your family, you know, everybody's resilient. They'll be fine. You know, there's lots of reasoning behind why it's okay to just throw yourself into your work and then just show up to your family and just let things fly. But there's also something to like really being intentional, really thinking things through, really thinking about who you want to be as a father or a mom or a husband or a wife or a family person, writing them down. Most people would say they've read hundreds of books on business and zero books on parenting, right? Many people would say I've read books on all these subjects, but you know, most people have not read enough about parenting or family life. I think we all can put a little more attention there. That's what we are doing. That's why, you know, props to everybody on this call, props to everybody listening to this, because that's what you're doing. You're like taking time out to think about things and grow and, you know, put attention to what I would argue is the most important place that we can thrive. Like once you meet basic human needs, right? Once you put a roof over the head and food in mouths, like what families really need are these types of conversations. How we are, how we show up, what we're going to talk about, how life is going to be at home and work on it. It takes work.
Yeah. I love that. I'd love to know, what are some great books that you'd recommend on family or parenting that you might recommend to
I haven't read any community? Books on parenting. that was true a couple of years ago. It's like, I looked at my bookshelf and I'm like, oh, this doesn't like, this doesn't make sense. I always said, I'm going to be the best dad ever. I'm going to read all the books. And then when Tiger was six, I'm like, I think I read one, you know, because I was always in like startup mode for my business. It always required more attention. All right, best books. Well, I've got to give a shout out to The Miracle Morning for parents and families, right? Like if that's your, if you're going to be part of this community, like you, that's a great place to start, right? That's a great place to start, even to know the heart and soul of, you know, McCarthy and that whole crew. So I think that's a great place to begin. I think that, and listen, so many books, if they have, if they're helping you be a better person, then you could argue help you be a better family person, right?
Yep.
That there's a good argument there for sure. So I could recommend a lot of books in that area. In fact, that's my top 10 books right there, right? Like, when you think about like even, Essentialism is not positioned as a family book, but when you start thinking about what's really important in your life and what you say no to, that book is a lot of what you say no to. And oftentimes that saying yes to your family is saying no to many other things. And so that to me is a really good book. I mentioned The Family Board Meeting by Jim Shields. That'd be a highly recommended book when it comes to parenting. You know, I'm a big fan of, and we could even go categorical here, when it comes to relationships, for men, when they're asking me about suggestions, I often recommend The Way of the Superior Man, which by the way, by title, is not a good representation of what that book is about. It's like, it sounds very ego-driven and like, you know, The Way of the Superior Man. Really what that's being is that's owning your life as a man. Right. And feeling like, and I would argue even more about not being superior to others. There's almost nothing in that book about being superior to others. There is, I don't even remember what it was. It's about your best self, right? The idea of becoming superior to your former self, if you will, like your growth, your progress. So anyway, I think that's a really good book. I'm a big fan of Esther Perel. So her book, Mating in Captivity, was one of my favorites. When it comes to marriage and relationships. If you haven't read anything by John Gottman, I think he's a wonderful resource. He's a leading marriage researcher. So what was his book? Like The 7 Principles of a Happy Marriage or something to that effect. Anyway, if you just look up Gottman's books, he has a new book out also called 8 Dates, which I'm in the middle of right now and I think is fantastic. So that those would be books on marriage. When it comes to raising kids, there's a lot of these are like, hey, where are you right now? What do your kids need? But like Julia Lithcott-Haynes has a book called Raising Adults, or How to Raise an Adult. It's called How to Raise an Adult. Sorry. And I think that's a good book because it really gets us thinking about how we raise a true adult in this world. And she talks a lot about how the checklisted childhood, she talks about like, you got to do this, you got to do this, you got to do this to be a great human being. And, you know, that she brings up a lot of really interesting points. Like she was a dean of admissions, I think, at Stanford or something like that. Anyway, she was involved in the executive team at Stanford. And she talked about how some of these kids would show up and they were just so dependent on their parents. They had not really become an adult by the time they were landing in Stanford. And she talked about all sorts of things in that book, like, you know, we say things like, well, it's not like it used to be. You can't let your kids play outside. And she goes, actually, you can. You know, the media has spread panic, but that we are grabbing a hold of our kids so much that we're actually hurting them. This idea of, right, you hear people talk about helicopter parenting and whatnot. That book is about how to let go and how to let your kids become adults as well. So sometimes type A personality parents want to micromanage everything. Every aspect of their kids' lives. And they do it because they have a good heart and they want to see their kids be really successful, but that's a really good book. So anyway, those are some thoughts.
Awesome, man. Awesome. Well, buddy, you've been very gracious with your time. I only have one last question for you.
I haven't even sent you the bill yet.
I know. So that's why I only have one more question. So the question is, what would be a question that you wish that people would ask you more?
Oh man. Hey, where do I sign up for Front Row Dads? That's a question I wish I got a lot more. and by the way, it's growing wonderfully. I'm so happy. We have almost 90 members now in the group.
Oh my gosh, dude.
But, you know, and we're going to do a launch around Father's Day for new guys to join. We can't, people can't sign up right now. We have a list of people that we'd like to be a part of it. And anybody in this community, by the way, would probably be a wonderful fit for Front Row Dads. It's very different than what you're doing here, and in the same spirit of what you're doing here, which is that we're
it's such a great compliment.
Yeah, it's such a great compliment. It's perfect.
It's such a great compliment. If you're, and I'll just say it for, in regards to Front Row Dads, any system, like the family system, the greatest way to strengthen the system is to not only work on things that strengthen the system as a whole, it's also to look at what are the individual parts in the system and where might those individual parts need to go in order for them to strengthen themselves this case. And the more you dig into that is they don't need to go somewhere where they're surrounded by other people that aren't like them. They need to go actually learn from people that are like them in their situation, going through what they're going through, sharing wisdom, sharing strengths, being able to feel like they're safe. And that's what Front Row Dads does for dads, is it gives dads a place to go, not to focus on entrepreneurship and maybe dad a little here. It's all dad.
Yeah.
Yeah. And husband. So I don't want to make that's it all right.
No, you got it. No, I mean, Front Row Dads by title started, which is how do we be better dads? And here's what we quickly realized is that in order to be an amazing dad, you have to be a great husband. It's even more important than being a great dad. If you were arguing an order of importance, your primary relationship with your partner should be whole. That's a first starting place to being an epic dad. All right. And to being an epic parent. So yeah, we have four pillars in Front Row Dads: vibrant health, emotional mastery, a thriving relationship, and intentional parenting are the four pillars that we focus on inside the group. And it's wonderful. And you know, something I want to just add to what you just said, Brother James, which is really good. And that is that this idea of the individual having a breakthrough, the individual strengthening themselves. Tatiana and I recently sat down and said, when our relationship has had a quantum leap forward, what happened? So let's look at 13 years of being in a relationship. When we've made it big, like when we hit a home run, when we took a leap forward, and there have been some really dark days, by the way. I think we both have used the D word, right? To talk about divorce, and like we've been at that point in our relationship. But why it's better now than it's ever been, and a year ago it was one of the toughest places it's ever been. And when we look back at all the breakthroughs, it was not what we did together, it was what we did individually. The biggest advancements in our relationship is when I addressed my own stuff, when she went away on an event by herself or with a group of people. She went away to a meditation retreat. She went away to a Go Wives event, right? She went away and did something. She got certified as a yoga teacher. She got certified as an EFT practitioner or a homeopath or whatever, like all these things she's done. When I went and saw a counselor, I had a breakthrough. When I went and did, like, those were all things that led to our breakthrough. It was never like I finally got the idea across to Tatiana that I've been trying to get across to her, and she changed and our relationship thrived. She finally did the thing that I wanted her to do and our relationship soared. It was always about me every single time, right? And that's not to say that couples counseling doesn't work or talking doesn't work together or working together. But in order to get that all to work, you need to be whole and complete. Right? That to me is the primary objective. So anyway, that's why Front Row Dads, right? It's taking time to work on yourself so that you can go back and thrive in the family.
And yeah, just to get even clearer on that point is it's not just going to work on yourself as a person. It's literally going and tapping into a space where you can say, hey, here's where I'm really like kind of struggling as a dad. Here's where I might need help. And you think about the rest of the world, and there's just not a space for it. Like for a couple guys to get together, it usually looks like beers and sports and like a bar or like somewhere where there's not quality conversation going on to enrich their ability to be husbands and to be dads. And so when I think about how they're getting strengthened, it's just, and it's so needed, man. Like, We recently were in Philadelphia for a Dare to Dream event, and we went into a school, and the first day, the school had this alarming statistic, which is 90% of the kids in the classes that we went into, 90% of them didn't have dads.
Wow. Whoa.
90%. I mean, and those kids, they face statistically, and you can just see it, so many challenges by not having, and what I should say, it's not they don't have a dad, they don't have a stable father figure.
Right.
How, you know, in relation to what that's, what that is today in our society. And you could even say that those stable father figures, that when you talk about what it is you need to be a dad, it's like, it's hard. It is really challenging. I was a stepdad, and it took so much energy and effort, and myself and the partner couldn't get along. And because we couldn't find that way, we couldn't find our way. We didn't have the tools. We never were able to strengthen our thing to be able to strengthen being a dad. And there's so many things that I could go into just in regards to what I observed in that time. I know it's nothing compared to many of you, but there's just the observation of the amount of work that has to go into the craft is really something I have such a deep level of respect for these days.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, look, wealthy kids face not the same, but they face challenges as well with dads that are just absent at work.
Yes.
Crushing it in life. They're facing major challenges there as well. Parents that, you know, you might provide the big home and the pool and the, you know, a private education, but the real education at home, the real connection and that real bond, that may be missing. And, you know, I've met a lot of guys down the road that built wildly successful businesses and were highly revered men, right, in the world. And you ask them, you know, about parenting, and, you know, you'll often hear, my biggest regret was not being there for my family. You know, my dad would tell you right now, if you said, what's your biggest regret? He'd be like, not being there for my family. My dad taught me work ethic for sure. Like a lovely, great man, love him to death, right? Like still I love my dad. He's a wonderful guy. He taught me so many important things, but he will tell you, he woke up every day. He was out the door at 6:30. He was a military captain, right? He crushed it at work. He went to the gym every night. He showed up, he had dinner, he went to bed, he read the paper, he went to bed and rinse and repeat. On Saturdays, he washed the car, he cleaned the garage. On Sundays, we went to church, and we might catch, you know, a couple minutes if we're lucky, right? And so I so appreciate my dad for so many things, but he'll tell you his greatest regret is just not spending more time, right? And but what I've never heard is I've never heard somebody say it when they've traveled down the road, you know, John, my biggest regret is like, I didn't, you know, I think I spent too much time with my family, and I think I left a million on the table. You know, I think I've missed that one promotion. And if I could go back, I would just spend less time with my family. I've just never, ever heard that. Right. So I think that, you know, this idea of being fatherless, certainly there's degrees on that spectrum that are very, they're dynamic on both sides. And I think it's important to realize both, right? The amount of drugs and alcohol, the problems with even wealthy kids, they're things we need to address. They're different problems, right, than on the opposite side of the spectrum. But we do need to address them as well.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And a great point, just bringing it all back together. Just doesn't matter where you are, you know, rich, poor, that father figure is such a crucial player in a human being's life. And none of it happens without the mom. So let's end this call with a big shout out to all the moms. Someday, there will be front row moms. They're, right now, they're called.
There is. There is a website. People can put
their name
in.
There's a website for front row moms.
Frontrowmoms.com. You go put your name in. That community is forming. Man. So, yeah.
Well, Johnny, thank you so much for taking the time and bringing your wisdom and your heart and all your amazing energy and experience to our community. We're just so grateful that we get to call you a brother in arms in this mission of raising up families around the world. And thanks again so much for being here. We will be together, you and I, in July at the Front Row Summit and Next Generation Leader Camp.
Yes.
What are those dates?
July 21st through the 23rd, Hudson, Ohio. Come hang out.
come hang out. And where do they, and where do we go in order for us to plug in and buy tickets and stuff?
frontrowfoundation.org/summit. Tickets are ridiculously cheap, guys. Like it's just barely covering the cost of hosting this thing. So go check it out. frontrowfoundation.org/summit. And it's a wonderful event for an individual. It's also a wonderful event for a family. So if it's just you, if it's your partner, if it's the two of you, if it's your whole family, we'd love to see you. It's going to be fantastic. And we just put a video on the Front Row Family Facebook page. I think you and I talking about the next gen leader camp. I'm so excited about this thing. It's going to be really great. Yeah.
It's going to be awesome. It's going to be such, working with your team is so great. So can't wait to be there in person with you. Have an amazing rest of the night. Tell the family. Brother James says, what's up? And thanks for letting us have dad for a little while. And buddy, you're a gift to the world, man.
Hey, thank you so much. I feel the same way. And guys, anybody listening now or later, if you want to reach out or talk about any of this, my personal email is just John, J-O-N, at frontrowglobal.com. Just shoot me an email. And look, if you're in this community, I'm happy to serve. So if there's a way that I can help, if there's a book, a resource, something that you need that would help, just say the word. Just email me, John, J-O-N, at frontrowglobal.com.
And I did a really poor job of giving you space to actually tell people where they could find you. Is there anywhere else to find you? Caught it because you're a podcast expert
I just welcome connection. You know, I really do. I welcome connection and that's it. I mean, if somebody's listening and you are a dad, you know a dad, then by all means, like Front Row Dads podcast, if you're consuming content this way and you like it that way, then check it out, Front Row Dads podcast. And then also our website, you know, we're always posting stuff there at frontrowdads.com. And again, yeah, Front Row Moms, that's coming. We just don't know exactly when. So we're just capturing interest and seeing that'll emerge eventually. But yeah, guys, I just look, if I'm not hard to be found, I make it easy to be found. So just connect on any level if you want. And we'd love to continue the dialogue.
Awesome. Buddy, make it a great night, man. We'll see you later on.
Thanks, everybody.